Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Johnny Smith.
I'm Richard Porter.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Biantle. Biantle.
Biantle?
Biantle.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, that viral strange thing on Instagram where that lady says Bentley in a, should we say, a foreign accent? Foreign. She's a foreign lady and she says Bentley in a foreign way. And she says, Biantle. Biantle.
Yes.
And I thought, Biantle. Every time I've been borrowing a Biantle over Christmas, and I'm going to say it's been a wonderful experience. It's countered the sinful weather that's just relentless really well.
So this was a Flying Spur Fev, is that right?
That's right.
He have some people. What do Biantle say officially? Because I noticed Land Rover people, if you ever ask them about their plug-in hybrids, they always say, oh, yes, the PHEV.
Yes. This one's just been referred to as a hybrid. But, I mean, PHEV just is just a better way of saying plug-in hybrid than PHEV.
You think PHEV sounds a bit cheap in the context of a Biantle because it immediately reminds you of a Mitsubishi Outlander?
Well, there's that. Yeah, and it's like people that say Bev. I don't think you need to say Bev. Because Bev's just like your mum's friend from around the corner. That used to drive a Celica.
Yeah. Isn't she? She used to be a cabin crew for BA in the 60s. But now she's just, because she's got kids, they're a bit older, so she works in the reception and opticians.
Yeah, and she did shitloads of aerobics in the 80s and had a Celica and used to drive it a little bit hot around the cul-de-sac.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like, do you know
quite
what?
Quite tall hair, I think, but very immaculate.
Mint. Absolutely mint.
Mint condition hair.
Sweet example of the mark. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, I have no idea.
Oh, yeah, so saying Bev instead of, you know, electric car. Yes.
So, yeah.
Bev and Mev and
Mev. Well, I'm not going to get too car-y initially on this podcast because I think that's the wrong approach. But I would say that I would say I've done well over 1,000 miles in it over Christmas period. Yeah, I've done loads,
nice.
And all of it is in pitiful weather. Hmm. And I've got 39 to the gallon on a run out of that car. Mm. And I don't, for listeners that don't know, you can buy the Flying Spur, which is the only saloon Bentley left, right?
Yeah.
It's the only saloon left, which makes me sad because I feel very proud driving around in a nice, chunky, chiselled saloon, I have to say. This one's got the 2.8-litre engine, so a six-cylinder. You can buy it in a V8 or a W12. But then it's got the hybrid electric system too. So it'll do about 30 miles, between like 28 and 32 EV only. Mm. But when they're together on a run, makes a massive difference, especially if you put in your destination on the sat-nav, because it will then immediately calculate, oh, you're going to go through that town or there's some crawling traffic there, so that's when we'll do EV only. And it does all that little stuff, so it ekes out as much eco as possible.
Nice.
And when you consider it weighs, I don't know, 36 tonnes. Actually, it doesn't. It only weighs, I think, 70 kilos more than the 12-cylinder car. It's actually really good. And I've really enjoyed it. And it's not slow. I've not missed all the other cylinders, if I'm honest.
If you give it the berries,
yes.
Is there a point at which, because it's a V6 under there, does it get a bit noisy, relatively speaking?
It does get quite noisy. If you belt it and the engine's not running, so, you know, it engages the engine from, like, cold, It's a bit like, I always feel like it's a bit like waking your dad up by creeping into his room and throwing a load of, throwing an ice bucket into his bed. You know, that's, I feel so bad, like, you join the motorway, EV only, and then you the throttle position goes down a little harder, and then it wakes the engine, and it just goes, oh gosh, all right, okay, I'm coming. It always feels like that.
Your dinner's getting gold, Bentley. My dad used to fall asleep in an armchair, and then you go, Dad, you're asleep, and you go, no, I wasn't, I was just resting.
Yes, that's such a dad response. That's clear dad response. Well, I told my brother, because he's obviously a Bentley person, but mostly old Bentley. And I said it's got a 2.8 engine. He looked at me and he went, don't tell me it's a Ford Cologne. And I went, no.
Imagine that.
I said, no, Greg, you know that this is 2024 now. This is not 1978. It's okay. But it did make me chuckle, I have to say. So it's been really good. And this particular car, despite the fact it's covered in muck because it's just been so filthy, it's got a dark green leather interior and with real wood. And the way people have reacted to me driving around in it has been fascinating, because there's been this underlying kind of quiet respect and head nodding. And I think the majesty of a large saloon, a large front-grilled saloon, is becoming extinct. We're just not seeing them around anymore. And I think if that had been, because I had the option of, and I want to say thanks to Bentley for lending me one for Christmas, because I didn't ask them, they offered. They offered me a Bentayga with the same drivetrain. And I was like...
Was your response quite robust?
My response was just like, no, do you know what? I'd actually, to be honest with you, I wanted to drive a saloon anyway, but I wanted to drive the base model Bentley. And the base model Bentley, you know, it's not exactly base, is the Spur. And I think the Spur's like a fantastic car. And I'm still mourning the loss of the Mulsanne. So therefore, there is only one saloon left, and it is the Spur and all that. I have to say though, because you've got hybridisation going on at the back end, the boot is a little too shallow for me. I opened the boot expecting to throw hundreds upon hundreds of Christmas presents in for friends and family. Thousands. And I realised that it was lucky that there were only three of us travelling, because the back passenger seat got filled with stuff. So, yeah, you do lose a bit of boot depth, cause hybridisation and all that.
Not to be too pedantic, but is the engine in that not a 2.9? Like the same engine that's used in some Panameras?
Hang on, is it a 2.9? Hang on.
So that would be... That'd be
Scorpio.
Scorpio V6 in there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a 2,894cc V6, but it's not the same as the engine from the Bentayga hybrid V6. Because that has the 2995 TFSI.
Different platforms and all.
That's right. But, yeah, this one's got a shorter stroke and all that.
I'm sure they're related, aren't they? They must be related, otherwise it would be economic madness. But last year I drove the Flying Spur with the W12, one of those W12 end of days editions they're doing. Edition 12.
That's called a great Enya. Great Enya track. Oh, no, yes. That's Book of Days. I got it wrong.
Yes,
sorry.
Yeah. That is still, that W12 engine in that car, it is lovely. And it's grunty, but not overwhelmingly so. It's just sort of there if you need it.
Mm.
It's weird, though, isn't it? We've talked about this before, ages ago, I think, on a video about how the Continental GT is one of those cars that just sort of quietly gets nicer and nicer with every iteration. And I think the Flying Spur is the same, because I remember driving the original Flying Spur and finding it a bit underwhelming somehow. And then I drove a W12 one last year from the latest model, and it was fabulous.
I've got a conclusion as to why this is the case. I think somebody at Bentley has been looking at Gary Barlow. And Gary Barlow, if you were to sweep everything off your kitchen table and put pictures down of Gary Barlow from 1991 until now, you'd say all of 90s Gary Barlow is actually not a particularly good-looking guy. But then just suddenly, in the early 2000s, it's like he realises what he can do with himself and how he can turn himself up, bit of facial hair, you know, maybe just slightly change the way you do your hair, whatever. But whatever it is, it's exactly that's happened to the Conti GT and the Spur. I think they started off both looking a little bit aux, and now they've both found their groove. And I hope the Spur, I hope the Spur finds more owners, because you see a lot of Conti GTs about, but you don't see so many Spurs. And I think I am sad about this potential demise of the saloon. I mean, we've got the old demise of the station wagon in the States, and it's a bloody shame, Rich.
Well, and all yes, that. Although I think there's probably, I haven't seen the stats, they'll be around. They are sort of starting to come out now, the sort of best-selling cars of 2023. Once you take pickup trucks out of the equation, I don't know what the best-selling car in the US will be, but I suppose it was for a long time, it was either the Accord or the Camry, wasn't it? I know the RAV4's been in with a shout recently. I don't know. Let's see if it's available yet. Best-selling cars USA 2023. Over here, oh, here we go. Well, there's something from October. The best-selling cars of 2023 so far. It's in reverse order, so we've got to get out the bottom. So it's F-150, Silverado, Ram are the top three. Oh, yeah, RAV4. RAV4 is number four. Tesla Model Y is number... hang on, how does that work? They've miscounted here. They've misnumbered these. Number five, Honda CR-V. Okay, so yes, SUVs are muscling in. Camry is now at number seven. This is only from October, so it's year-to-date, but I don't imagine the Camry's made a sudden surge up the charts because it feels like it's quite far behind the others. But anyway, the saloon's not totally dead. There's still a saloon in the top 10 in the US, I would guess. In fact, there's... Ooh, do you know what? This was, again, just the caveat, this was only till October. But the 10th best-selling car, or best-selling sort of passenger vehicle, including trucks, in the USA was the Jeep Grand Cherokee.
The Grand?
Yeah, it's quite surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought that wasn't doing so well, but maybe it's just only everywhere else, apart from in the homeland. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, you don't... Interesting.
You don't ever see new Grand Cherokees here.
Can you even buy a new Grand Cherokee here? I'll be honest, I'm not paying attention. they delete it because they were to move towards the sort of smaller ends of the range? Let's have a look.
Yeah.
No, it's on the... Well, it's on the Jeep UK website.
So you can buy it then?
Yeah. There's... The Jeep range is the Avenger, which... it's a little electric one.
Good car.
They're doing a petrol one, aren't they, soon, I think, as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Renegade, the Compass, the Grand Cherokee and the Wrangler. No sort of regular Cherokee at the moment. Is there one in the US? We're very good at this, aren't
we? Yeah, we're really good.
At our fingertips. Because I thought there was still a Cherokee in the US, but maybe not.
I'll tell you what. I am getting... such a deja vu. I'm drinking coffee with a sprinkle of cinnamon on the top, Rich.
Oh.
And it reminds me of you and Bulldog Services. Because...
what, you're slightly quirky coffee order.
Yeah, I'm going to use the term back in the day when we used to do Smith & Sniff as a video rather than a podcast. And we used to meet at Bulldog Services, people who've followed us for a long time will know all of this, but we used to choose a particularly dismal services to meet and start filming, and my preference for coffee is always a little tap of cinnamon powder on the top of either a black coffee or just a strong coffee, and I've got one now, and I thought, yeah, it feels good. It feels
good.
It feels like I've rewound time off of Cher. Turning back time.
Yes. if you could reach the stars.
Yes.
So the Jeep range in the US is Grand Cherokee, and then there is a Cherokee still on sale over there. alongside the Compass. They also, the car that we don't get that they do that does look quite nice, I think, in a sort of would-be-pointless-here kind of way, is the Gladiator, which is basically a Wrangler pickup.
Oh, yes. And then they do the Hemi Wrangler, don't they? Which is called the...
Yeah, not sure.
Isn't it called the Tomahawk Twat Face or something? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it is called the...
You've got the Trackhawk, which is the Grand Cherokee with some, like, lunatic engine.
Yes. Are they still doing that? I felt like one of those things they sort of did because they had a load of Hemi Hellcat-y engines to get rid of. The Jeep USA website's not working very well, I'm going to be honest. I can't get it to... the screen's gone black.
Has it gone into limbo mode?
I think it has. I do beg your pardon. I'm speaking ill of the Jeep website. I think it's my internet might be playing up.
Okay.
Along with my plumbing. Not a euphemism.
No.
I'm quite pissed off at this because after we'd recorded this, I was going to do some other things. And then this afternoon, I was going to trek myself and go to the cinema on my Todd to see the Ferrari film.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, because I want to see it, and I don't think it's around for very long. I just thought, that's nice. I've carved out some time in my week. I thought I'll do all my work as fast as I can, and then I'll be able to go to the cinema and watch the Ferrari film. But now I can't because I'm waiting for a plumber to come this afternoon to fix our water, so can't do that. So next week, there probably won't be a review of the Ferrari film, but there might be a review of A Man Called Steve Who Mends Pipes.
Well, talking of films, because I've got this written down, over the Christmas period, obviously, a lot of... And by the way, Happy New Year, everybody. A bit late to that, but 2024, hi. There's an awful lot of incompetent flood driving going on, but we'll come on to that in a second. Before we do that, I decided to be a bit different and watch only Die Hard 2 instead of Die Hard 1 on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And I realised that when the terrorists are airside, I don't know, dicking around trying to get on a plane with a drug lord, I think, they're in Range Rover Classics.
Are they?
They're in Range Rover Classics with bull bars on. Yeah. Right. And I realised that this was a 1990 film, Die Hard 2. And I realised that the demise of the bull bar, there used to be, everything used to be bull barred, didn't it? And we know why that's gone, because it's dangerous. But there's also, and this wasn't on Die Hard 2, unless I didn't look close enough, the badge bar. The demise of the badge bar, Rich.
Yes.
What's happened to those silly ornaments on a bar that goes across the bumper? Someone's forwarded me a picture of a really quite heavily decorated Jag XJ on Instagram. And I thought, is this the ultimate old money statement? It's quite old money.
But it's also, it's a bit sort of like you're still in the Cubs. You need to show off how many badges you've got. Rather than having your mum sew them onto your sleeve, you stick them on the front of you. If whatever, I mean, it's sort of maybe, what would be a good badge bar car back in the day?
Oh, badge bar cars, we used to see them all the time. So you'd get, it would be a heavier engined MGB, so it'd be an MGC.
Ah, yes.
That's quite, because it can cope with the weight of the badges.
I was going to say, weren't they famously lousy handling cars because of
awful.
The weight of that terrible engine?
Awful.
And then you're going to put a little bit more weight at the front with a
awful
a platter of badges.
Awful.
To show that you're in the AA.
It's awful. Rover P6, every classic car show always was the first badge bar displayer, I would say.
Do you think P6 is more badge bar than P5?
Oh, they're both badge bar-y, aren't they? They're badge
the
bar
lower, yeah, I just wonder whether you'd start to worry that your engine was getting enough airflow
into
the radiator if you put badges across the front of a P6, although they're supposed to have that lower.
You'd have to reach for the Kenlo illuminating button, as was, which I do like. The fact that it lights
Hi,
up to say...
I'm Ken Lowe.
You might remember the actor cool. Rob Lowe. Well, I'm his second cousin.
Can I just read you the names? I'm sorry, it finally loaded up this page that I was trying to get to. The
Jeep
Gladiator
Jeep website.
Yeah, and I think it was my internet, so I'm not going to blame Jeep for this, but it took a while and it suddenly popped up. So, but, the model names of the Gladiator range, they're a bit much, I think. They start with the Spout and the Spout S, which Remo called a Spout.
Spouts. Spouts.
Then there's the Willys. I understand in context that's a reference back to the original Jeep. But then there's, I think this is a bit on the nose, there's a model called the Freedom.
Freedom.
It doesn't have the I put that in, but it's called the Freedom. Yeah. Jeep Gladiator Freedom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I might as well just have fuck yeah after it as well.
I was just about to say America fuck yeah. It's back.
Yeah. Incredibly, there isn't a Gladiator model called America fuck yeah, but there probably should be. There's the Rubicon, the Mojave, the High Altitude.
What?
And then the Rubicon Far Out, but they've put Far Out as all one word, and it does at a glance, your brain sees fart, even though it's not there. The Rubicon farts, for some reason, makes me think of that really nice fizzy drink that you can get at Rubicon.
I was going to say, mango flavor. It is mango, and you just chug some of that, and then you start parping out the back end.
Yeah, it's just very fruity. Anyway, I don't know why it's just, really gone in on these model names. Also, a very big model range. You don't, and it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 models in that range. Anyway,
Well,
go back to Die Hard.
Yeah, let's go back to Die Hard 2.
Just to be difficult, you watch Die Hard 2, mm-hmm. but not Die Hard Original, because that's what everyone else is watching at Christmas.
Yeah, that's true.
I can't remember a single thing about Die Hard 2.
Okay, so set at an airport. Terrorists take over a little... By the way, spoiler alert from 1990, everybody. terrorists...
also, I noticed you used the word airside, which I like, because I like the word airside, but it's one of those words where I feel like, as I use it, maybe I'm not allowed to use it because I don't actually work in aviation.
Well, neither do I.
It feels like a very specialised word.
I quite like it, though. I feel like I'm closer to the subject. I don't know. Or I'm just being a complete stroker. But either way, Die Hard 2 begins with naked Tai Chi watching the news. You must remember that. There's planes taking off and landing, and then there's a head terrorist guy watching the news whilst doing naked and clearly hot, unless he's just been working up a sweat by doing other exercises, doing naked Tai Chi whilst watching the news. He's very sinewy as well. That's enough of that. It's a really good film. I highly recommend it to everybody who hasn't ever watched it, which will be nobody apart from Richard. But
I think I have watched it. I just don't remember it. But that's, you know, it's kind of overshadowed by the original, I suppose.
Completely. But it's not a bad film, I would say. There's still obviously a bit of smoking in it. And that kind of thing. A couple of bad police cars that just drive into other cars really slowly outside the airport. Usual.
Blah, blah, blah.
The other thing that happened at Christmas, obviously lots of games, and I was kindly given a game, like a trivia game all about animals. Just a quick fire little game to play, and I was playing it on New Year's Eve with my brother's family. Family. And there was a question all about swans. And my brother went, if I was ever going to be reincarnated, there's just no way I'd want to be any other animal apart from a swan. They're brilliant. And I went, what?
Really?
And he looked at me really intensely, slightly aggressively, went, of course. He said, because it's a boat and an aeroplane all in one. And I went...
Yeah, I mean, it's a passable car as well. I mean, I know they're not great on that, but they can get a clip on, can't they? They can waddle about. But the same is true of ducks, so why wouldn't he want to be a duck?
Because he said swans are more graceful and they get more respect, which is true. He's thought about that. My brother's thought about this, being reincarnated as a swan. But I went, so... And in fact, weirdly, later that day, we went out for a walk in between main course and dinner because everyone was a little bit sort of like heavy. And a swan on its own went flying overhead with its neck fully outstretched. And he went, look at that. He went, basically, look, that's a fucking Okrana plant. Look at it. Look, that can land on water at any moment it wants to. It can. It just doesn't live by the rules. He's just started waxing lyrical about swans.
Doesn't live by the rules. What rules, though? I imagine if they could, swans might go drink driving or something because they're swans. They know no better. But I don't understand what rules. Like, they're still bound by the laws of physics. It's just that they can fly. But
I don't know.
You know what swans remind me of? When you see a swan in flight, I immediately think of is Concorde.
Oh yes, because the neck.
Swans
the neck.
Are the Concorde of the bird world.
Is it the long neck sort of going down a bit to land?
Yes, and they're white as well, which I suppose is a bit,
My brother likes Concorde, so maybe he's down with
Oh, there you go,
too.
Tell him that. Sell him that. See if, I bet he goes, yeah, I know, I've already thought of that. He probably has. It's probably part of the appeal.
Weirdly, only 24 hours before my brother's sudden outburst of wanting to be reincarnated as a swan, someone on Twitter X forwarded me a link all about old Neanderthal musical instruments that have been discovered by archaeologists, and one of them was a swan bone flute. I don't know if you saw that. But it made me laugh so much because obviously the terminology of flute and stroker is fairly regularly used on this podcast because this is a really informal informative car based podcast. But yeah, the swan bone flute was a thing. So apparently a Neanderthal, I say apparently, it sounds like it was on the news recently. Will have just grabbed a swan, sort of like swung it around and killed it, and then used it, eaten it clearly, and then used its neck as a musical instrument. It's very odd, isn't it? It's very odd.
I suppose it's a period of discovery, and maybe they were less respectful of swans than we are now.
Well, clearly.
Because, I'd imagine in Neanderthal times it was a bit more needs must.
Of course.
You know, you didn't go, oh, look, that creature's really beautiful. I better not kill it and eat it.
No, because I'm cold and hungry.
Of swans. That'll make our parks look nicer. Let's leave it alone. They just went, screw it, I want to play some music. Hey, Dave, put the tunes on. Hang on a minute. I'm going to snap this swan in half and use its bones as a flute. What's a flute? I just thought of it.
It's a tube you blow through. But I tell you what, I'm going to smash a couple of holes in it and see if it sounds different.
Do you think that the experimentation required to get to the point where they went, right, okay, so here, the following animals do not work as flutes. One, gerbils. Two, cats. Three, camel. They just worked through a load of ones. Sparrows, too small, no good.
Well, they've got a huge
eagle.
Mound of bones they're just rattling through. Yes. Like Lego. Do you just tip a bucket of Lego at and go, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this will
but
work.
That's okay, so... we've worked out that a wolf's fibula makes a brilliant stirring spoon for stew. So we're going to do that there. Swans, yes, flute, good idea.
Yeah, and they
it's the same
okay.
Only same way that I don't know how they arrived at realizing that certain ingredients go together to make certain things. You know, like how did cake come about? There must have been a process to get there.
Well, it's usually mistakes. It's usually happy mistakes, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, that's it.
So someone's got to document them in order for them to survive over time. And usually in the old days, that's why they used to sing songs to kids, isn't it? Because it was part of education and learning. If you sang relentlessly the same lyrics, you'd just remember. So you'd
well,
go,
it's the thing, isn't it? I suppose it is. It's a very memorable way to do it, to just to hammer home the point.
Yes, you just go to sleep, my darling, find a swan and kill it, drill its bare bone neck and then play it for the next song. Or something. And you go, oh, yeah, so every time I see a swan, I'm just going to think about the fact that if I snap its neck off and then drill it.
If you dismantled it, you could make a passable flute. Or a novelty vape, I don't know.
Swan neck vape. Well, anyway, oh damn, you got me thinking. You know the demise of the badge bar? What about if we're going to go full old money? What about the bonnet ornament on a modern car? We get this sometimes on Instagram. We get sent people photographing, I don't know, a brand new, I've seen it, a brand new like Toyota RAV4. And it's got a huge sterling silver horse bolted through the bonnet.
Yes.
And you go, oh, yes. Okay. What do we think about this? Because I think it could be the ultimate old money statement in today's world. What do you think?
Well, Her Majesty the Queen used to have some kind of little ornament. I think it was a dog on the bonnet of her Range Rover.
Did she?
So,
was it one of the corgis? It was one of the corgis, I bet.
Ah, now, yes. That's, well, I'll try and find a picture of this. I was going to type in Queen Range Rover, but I was just worried it's going to come up with Freddie Mercury leaning on a classic.
But on
yes, here we go, look, there's a
job.
Picture. It is definitely a dog. Also, the Queen, may she rest in peace, not a tall lady.
No.
And this shot, head-on, of her driving her L322 Range Rover, she's one of those people where basically her nose is just below the height of the top of the steering wheel. She's just basically eyes and hair as she drives.
So it looks like a child has stolen it.
Well, I saw a lady the other day driving a Fiat 500 who was the same thing, and I was a bit like, I mean, 500's not a big car.
No.
So that must have been a very wee lady. And I just thought, I was trying to remember, because I was thinking, I'll put my seat, but my seat's already down as low as it'll go, because I'm quite tall. But I remember, have you ever driven the latest Aston V8 Vantage?
I haven't driven the latest Vantage, no, I haven't.
The seat goes down incredibly far. I don't know why.
What, like you feel like you're really disappearing through the floor pan?
Yes, it does. It feels like you're in a lift and you're just going down into the basement of the car. But you're not. You can just get right down on the floor. And it's like it's too much. You know, normally, I would say, as a general rule, I have seats about as low as they'll go because that's usually about right for me.
Me too.
But this, it was like, this is too low. I don't feel in control of the car. This is my point. I was going to say, if you're very, very small, I sort of feel like you're not quite in control because you haven't got as good a visibility as you might hope for. If your nose is pretty much, you know, in line with the badge on the steering wheel. But I found another picture of the Queen here. It's not clear what this is. It might be a horse.
What, you thought it was a dog for crying out loud?
No. Oh, no, it is. I think it is a dog.
A dog horse?
No, I think it's a dog. It's hard to get a clear. I don't know. Well, I'll find some better pictures and stick them on the page. Yeah, it's a dog. It's definitely a dog. But it looks to me like it's a Labrador.
Okay,
it's definitely not a corgi because it's got longer legs.
Well,
Queen Range Rover bonnet ornament. It's also mounted quite far back, I presume, for safety reasons, because it would look bad if the Queen impaled a commoner.
But somebody, someone's job, whether it was someone at Range Rover or not, someone's job would be to drill the bonnets of new Range Rovers or any other royal cars that might have had that and fit these figurines. Because this came to me because this Bentley. That I've been borrowing has that lovely flying bee ornament, which comes out and goes away at will on the top of the grill.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. shopify.com/retail23.
And it has illuminating little wings, which my kids were marveling at. And they found the menu and the touchscreen where you can conceal it and reveal it at will. So you can go on the motorway and put it away, for example. I always put it away on the motorway. And it's really, really cool. But there's there's not a lot of that stuff going on anymore. And I do wonder whether or not these figurines sort of bolted through the bonnets of new cars. I think that could be an old money thing. Imagine a Subaru Legacy with a Shire horse mounted on the bonnet. You'd look at that and go, that's old money landowner, that is.
Yes.
Whether you think it's distasteful or not, irrelevant. Old school landowner.
Apparently the Queen's bonnet mascot on her Range Rover was a Labrador with a pheasant in its mouth.
Well, bloody hell. Have you put that in Boring Car Trivia 1, 2, 3 or 4?
I have not, but I flipping should.
Well, and, that's going
in. Apparently the whole royal family gets these car mascots from a foundry called Louis Lejeune, which is actually in this country, although it sounds French. But, it's a specific foundry.
Wow.
Which makes them for the royal
that's
family.
That's Old Money Bonnet Mascot Foundry. I'm going on their website later.
Yeah.
Totally.
I wonder if they have a website. Hang on, let's have a look.
Hang on, could I get one made? Could I get one made of say a swan in flight?
Louis Lejeune Limited, this is Wikipedia, but we'll go with it, is a small bronze foundry in England producing mainly car mascots. It is the only surviving maker of custom car mascots from the Art Deco era of the 20s and 30s.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, so...
God, just that's I am really keen to go on that site. I'm not going to do it now because I'm professional and we're recording a podcast. But, you know,
I don't think they have a website. They probably don't need one, do they? They're very old school.
I might do an eeny, meeny, miny, moe on one of my cars after a nice bottle of Merlot and Malbec and go right. Which of you is going to get an Art Deco mascot?
Now, hey, but. Obviously, if you did the Insight, you don't want to compromise the aero because it's all about efficiency, that car.
Oh, shit, yeah.
But what could be more aerodynamic and also delight your brother than a swan? A bonnet swan.
A bonnet swan would be amazing. Do you know what? My brother is in a car quandary. His extremely frilly Mark IV Golf is just looking
so
frilly.
Oh, I saw you doing a shite-ite for Passat, yes.
He's been very vocal with me over the Christmas period about he feels like the time has come that he's debating. He said, I want to find either a clean, deceased spec Mark IV Golf estate to replace his ghetto Mark IV hatch. Mm. Or, he said, I'd love to go back to the B3 days. Oh, I've had so many B3. My brother's had so many B3 Passats.
The B3 days.
He loves the B3. He says he thinks the B3 is one of the best cars Volkswagen's ever made. He thinks it's better than all of the Golfs. He thinks it was so ahead of its time and so robust, aero, and it is. It's a great estate.
But they've got to be very rare now, surely.
They are, which irritates him immensely because there's none out there and he just can't get his head around the fact there's not any around and they're not for 400 quid like they used to be.
Well, no, because, I mean, they are pretty much collector's items, surely.
Yeah, yeah, they are.
A dub head of some sort. I mean, why would he not go for a B5?
No.
I think they're still kicking around, aren't they?
No, I think electric handbrake and this...
What? No, not in a B5. That's still...
Is it still Manuel Wand?
That's still Manuel, because they were out in the late 90s, weren't they? So,
well, he's worried about the injection. He's worried about the more expensive fuel pump.
Right. Yeah.
There are crucial elements for a car when you're buying a car carefully for around £1,500 to £2,000, and you know that the fuel pump is 700 quid if it goes ding. He just can't live like that. Greg is not like that.
And I suppose it just gets worse. It just reminded me of, I'm in a car nerd WhatsApp group, and someone had found a Porsche Cayenne V8 for sale, but apparently it needed a new alternator. And one of the wise heads in the group, who is actually in the car trade, went, walk away now.
Oh, really?
That won't just be the alternator. That will be some horrific body controller sort of wiring multiplex nonsense issue that will cause the whole thing to be trouble. And I think that's probably not uncommon amongst modern cars, isn't it? It's just issues.
Well, that's. I mean, that is valid. Some cars are cheap for a reason, but it doesn't always stop me. I'm not going to talk about the Bentley anymore. Bientle. But with the recent relentless rain that we've had in the UK, which is I don't get depressed about the weather too easily, but it has really properly started to grind. Awful lot of nozzles driving around in floodwater too fast. I'm just going to put that out there. Like, I mean, the videos that just keep appearing time after time on Instagram, and it's usually Audis just Dysoning water up and then hydraulicking their asses off, and the owners being totally surprised that you shouldn't drive at, I don't know, 20 miles an hour through a river in an S4.
Yes. But, or some absolute ring. It's usually dash cam footage, isn't it? Some absolute ring. Oh, again, often in an Audi, who has decided it's still okay to do 95 in the outside lane of a motorway in the absolute slashing rain, and then they have an aquaplane incident.
Oh, complete anal muzzle.
Go across all three lanes and duff into somebody else. Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a lot of... I think that school of thought that goes, well, if I put my bright rear fog on, then I can still do 80, even though visibility is down to 4 metres.
Complete needle-dick behaviour. But the reason why I've said this is being a fev, this spur...
Yeah.
It made me realise a fev is a really fine thing to have when you're dealing with floods. Because...
Oh, yeah?
Well, because as I was driving back from Wales, when all of the storms with all of the names were chasing me, I don't know, Storm Ringspanner or whatever it was called was coming along. And so there was just loads of standing water. There was one of them where, you know, you just can't quite tell how deep this puddle is going to be. I'm not going to take a run at it because that's a full move. But what I did was I just stuck it in EV only mode, so thus killing the engine. And I crept through in electric mode. And I thought, well, the engine's not running, so it's not going to snort anything up, because I don't know where the air intake is on this particular car. Some cars, like BMWs and a lot of Audis, they're really low, and that's why they Dyson up water instantly and die.
There was a generation of Renaults, wasn't there, that famously had very low intakes and were often, they would just hoover up a load of rainwater.
They would, wouldn't they?
Hydraulic themselves.
Cocaine nostrilling river water.
Yes.
So actually, having a FEV or even a full electric... It's
an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, you take away that nervousness by just putting it in EV mode. And also, because it's quiet, you can almost compose your thoughts a little bit more. You don't have to build revs or any of that nonsense.
Just, shut up, engine. You're distracting me.
I have to say, I much prefer reversing an electric car in tight car parks and stuff, because I can just hear myself think and go, right, what's the tactic here? What's going on here? What are we doing?
Well, often you can meter it out a little bit more, can't you? So I feel like,
yeah.
Did you ever try to reverse a Maserati? This is a bit specific, but Maserati 3200 GT, or was it the four? It might have been the 4200. I can't remember. There was one of them, the coupes, that it for some reason it was impossible to just gently creep backwards in the one with the
lurchy gearbox.
Yeah, it was a single clutch automated box, wasn't it, in those earlier ones? And it just everything was all out of whack in it. Like, they hadn't tested it in reverse in a car park ever, because you sort of had to give it a bit more throttle to get the clutch to engage, and then it would suddenly engage a lot, and then it would surge backwards. It was a nightmare. I just remember it specifically being a very difficult car to reverse park. But yeah, EV, as long as it's calibrated decently, then you can sort of just trickle it in.
I do like the trickling in. I have to say, I put a little message out on Twitter, not on Twitter, on Instagram. We have a Smith and Stitt. We're not on Instagram. We're not on. I'm getting this wrong. We're not on Twitter as Smith and Sniff. We're on Twitter as me and him, like, separately. But we're on Instagram as Smith and Sniff, and a few of you already know this. I put a little thing out last night just saying, we're going to record a podcast today. You got any questions? And it seems that there's quite a lot of questions. It's just a shame I can't work out which
I'm glad
you
brought this up towards the end of the show.
Oh, is it nearly the end?
Well, no, we've got about 15 minutes, but you know how we go on a bit. Well, you probably should have done this at, you know, the beginning or the middle. I haven't even seen these questions, you know. This is I didn't know you'd done this, and I now can't find.
Well, do you know what's really annoying is I've told you that there's loads of answers and I can't work out, because I don't find Instagram particularly intuitive for that sort of thing.
No, it's not. I mean, I don't know how you manage to spend so much time on there, because I find it infuriating. That's just, where are these questions?
Oh, I don't know. I had them up before we started filming, before we started recording, and now I can't find them. Do you know why this is?
This is tremendous.
Do you know why this is? And I've come to this conclusion. And I don't know whether it's the way I'm wired. And my brother had this conversation. This was pre-Swan Chat. He said to me, "What's going on with Facebook?" He said, "I can't understand it at all. I can't navigate it. It's not intuitive. It's ridiculous." And then people send you a message and you've got to download another app that's just about messages. He said, "What the fuck's that all about? Who's invented this shit?" And I said, "Well, I don't go on Facebook either, because I just can't navigate it. It doesn't work for me. It just seems too scattergun for me, and I just don't. I'm scared of it."
I can get my head around Facebook, but I think Instagram's the one that defeats me, just because it does, because I'm middle aged and it's too much. Well, just, you know, your brain gets full up, doesn't it? So I can't see. I'm on Instagram now, and I cannot see. Maybe because I'm not on our account, I'm on my account.
Well, that's why you can't see it, you complete tool bag.
No, I've just switched to our account and I still can't see. Oh, wait. Oh, okay. I'm starting to see them.
Yeah, you complete flu.
Okay. Oh, God.
What do you mean?
Oh, there's loads.
Well, yeah, there is loads. It's just I can't actually find them. I don't. I had them up when we started to record this, and now they've gone, and I don't know why.
Right, listen, well, I'm scrolling down. I see one here that just says panda update ? The panda's back.
Oh.
I was telling Johnny before we started recording, because I forgot that it might be material for the actual podcast. The panda's back from the garage. But unfortunately, I picked it up on, I think it was Christmas Eve. And so I could only, didn't have time. I had presents to wrap and stuff. So all I did was drive it 10 minutes around the block and then parked it. I need to take it for a drive to make sure it's all working properly. But the guy at the garage, bless him, has A, not charged me as much as I was dreading it would
be. Which is good.
B, he said, you don't have to pay until, take it away, make sure you're happy with it, and we'll, you know, snag any problems. But it seems to be okay. I mean, it's working in that it drives and stops, and it didn't do one of those things before. So
that's really good.
Panda's back. More news as I have it. But we haven't mentioned my Christmas present to myself.
Oh.
That you were slightly disdainful about, but which was a bit of a spur of the moment purchase.
Oh, yeah.
Just before Christmas.
Yes.
Because I did a load of miles in the last few weeks in my Range Rover, and when I reflected back on how long I'd spent standing in petrol stations and how much money I'd given to petrol stations, I got quite despondent about the whole thing and just went, I don't think this can continue in 2024. I think it's time for a new family car / long distance hack that can do the miles. So I started looking around a little bit, and I was thinking I'd go back to an EV. I feel like it might be time, because we had the iPace and it worked well for us at the time. Maybe go back to an EV and then it won't absolutely ruin me. And then this coincided with discovering that there was a very specific offer on a very specific car going on. Well, actually, there were two.
A specific offer?
Those VW ID Buzzes.
Yep.
Do you remember we talked about them on Twitter? Were we talking to people about it? It's a very cheap lease deal going on an ID Buzz.
Yeah.
Like way cheaper than they've ever been. And we couldn't quite figure out why this would be, but maybe they just had some stock to shift. And so that was interesting. But I don't know. I've not driven the ID Buzz. I know you like it.
It's really, really good to drive.
But that VW...
The infotainment is gash. Mm. It is gash.
The other offer that was going on only in December, and I think this is an obvious one just to clear stock and plump up sales figures for the year, because you had to not only order but take delivery of the car by 31st of December.
Really?
Yeah. It's but it was a very tasty deal, because it was a lease deal, but way less than they would normally charge on the Tesla Model Y.
Tesla,
which we couldn't. We talked, because I said this at the live show at Stellantis. I said I started suddenly looking at the Model Y and going, do I actually more interested in that? Because previously I had no interest in it whatsoever, and I was suddenly like, maybe that's not actually not so bad. And then someone called us out and said that maybe just me, was saying Tesla instead of Tesla.
I say Tesla,
but I don't know which is right, and now I can't remember which one I say, and I've just started sort of alternating a bit.
And that's what I do with Porsche. It's a 50% Porsche, 50% Porsche, depending on the audience, how impatient I am, how quickly I'm speaking, all that stuff. I think I never say Tesla, never.
Tesla? People can...
I mean, I know Americans do, and it is an American company, so maybe we're wrong and they're right. I mean, I'm not going to...
Well, we're into the Dacia Dacia thing again, aren't we? It's like, do you say it the way that people in its
native country
say it?
Yes.
But in which case, we should all be saying Peugeot.
That's true, because Dacia is Dacia said in Romania, and I say Dacia because I remember when I first got exposed to them and the... I was in Romania and everyone said Dacia, so I thought, well, I'm going to say that.
Well, it almost feels like it's being polite, isn't it? It's like making the effort a bit, like trying to speak language in a country you're in. Just even a little bit of effort goes along.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Anyway.
Je m'appelle Johnny and all that.
J'habite à La Rochelle.
UK. Yeah, England. Yeah.
So it's a Tesla running an offer on the basic rear-wheel drive Model Y in December, but you had to get one pronto, and because they're from stock, they could, as it turns out, turn around a car quite quickly. So I thought, I'm interested in this, and I've never driven a modern Tesla because after the Roadster, I was associated with Top Gear, and Top Gear are on Tesla's shit list because of taking the programme to court over the Roadster review. And so I discovered they'll do overnight test drives, and they just bung you a car.
That's really good.
And take it away. It is really good. And they also encourage you to go and try out the charging on the supercharger network, because I think they know rather smugly that it's better than most public charging. So I did that, and sure enough, it's really good.
Well, it's-
and while we sat there, I had my kids with me. They discovered all the games and shit on the screen, and I couldn't get them to leave. I was like, we only need 15 minutes charging here, and we've got to go. And they wouldn't get out of the car because they were busy playing games and making it fart and turning that fire thing it does and all this stuff. So the children were immediately sold on it. And then I took it home, and then my wife had a go in it, and she was like, yeah, it's all right. So it's like, fine, sort of, it's a car, isn't it? Which is part of the thing that always annoys me about these kind of Tesla evangelists going, oh, they're just better than everything else. You go, well, they are just cars. They're monocoque cars.
Like it's made of steel.
Most other cars on the road. Yeah, no, I know they've got some really interesting tech in them, but they are not like, even like a BMW i3, which was sort of made in a fundamentally more interesting and unusual way. A Tesla Model Y, Model 3, it's basically a monocoque car. I know they've got aluminium panels on it, but it's sort of steel and aluminium. Metal matrix monocoque, just like most other cars these days. But they do good low-pressure sales, and they were doing a good offer. So, yes, long story short...
Are you going to tell us how much you're paying for this, or is that those cars?
It's $399 a month.
300 sheets, and what did you put down?
$3,000, I think.
$3,000, okay.
Yeah, something like that. Well, actually, no, it's a bit less than that because I moved the sliders around a bit. I can't remember now.
Well, so you accidentally paid $12,000 and you restricted.
Well, I mean, you probably could actually, couldn't you? And then your monthlies would be, because I saw this Auto Express were highlighting the fact you could have a Clio, I think it was, for £69 a month. And which is true, but you have to put down like $10,000 or something, so it's not quite as attractive as it sounds. But that's the world of leasing and PCPs, isn't it? You can move the sliders all over the shop to get it to sound like you have to look at the overall amount of money that's going to leave your account over 2-3 years, whatever you do. But yeah, it was just too tempting to turn down because I thought I've got potentially quite a lot of sort of more distance driving to do, and the Range Rover will ruin me. The Panda, well, the jury's out on that. So I felt like we did need a new car, and it was just like the charging network is way better. And this is the bit that really surprised me. I always assumed those modern Teslas were lots of amazing tech in a really bog standard and quite crappy car. And actually, it's quite a nice car to drive.
Yeah, they drive very well. I mean, the one that you've got has had, I think, had the suspension update.
It has the comfort suspension, in inverted commas. Yeah. Now, I still find the ride a little bit busy, but one of the things I discovered, I've only had this thing a couple of weeks, so I'm still sort of playing around with it, but the factory spec tyre pressures are 42 PSI all round.
Whoa.
And obviously this is done for range reasons.
Yeah.
But I was talking to a chassis engineer that we know for another car company, and he said, there's another thing here. American customers don't like, you know, in the door jamb, you get the little sticker that says, in a European car, it'll say, it'll have the little graphic with lots of people and bags.
Yes.
And they'll go, if you're doing this, then your tyre pressure should be this. If it's just you knobbing about, then it should be this. And there's probably some other options as well sometimes. American customers don't like that. It's too much, too confusing.
Really? What, so fully laden or not fully laden?
Yeah, too much. Even though Americans are obsessed with rotating their tyres every 20 miles, they for some reason don't like too much a menu of pressures. So instead, they tend to just do one pressure, but that has to be able to cope with max speed, max payload running. So obviously it's at a certain end of the spectrum, and Tesla want max range as well, so it helps to sort of err towards the firm side of things. So I've taken a load of air out of the tyres.
So you're running around at 12 PSI.
Yeah, they're making that really sort of wet noise as the car drives along, because the tyres are so baggy.
You're not getting caught in any mud, are you, with your rear-wheel drive Tesla?
No.
You're fine.
No, if I end up driving across the desert, I'd be fine. But I took them down to 38, and it's taken the edges off the ride, so that's one thing. And then I saw someone online saying, oh, the other thing is, of course, the suspension loosens up, and I thought, well, does it? I mean, it feels like maybe you've just got used to the car. But our chassis engineer friend said that is actually, to a degree, that is true, and they don't do any calibration work on a prototype until it's got 1,000 miles on it, because you need everything to bed in. So we'll see. But the ride is okay, but it's not brilliant. It's not a Rover 75.
Well, a good friend of mine bought one of the first UK-wise. He's still got it, actually. I saw him over Christmas, and that reminded me of how exceptionally firm it is. It's sport, you know, AMG track mode firm.
Oh, well, that's just stupid.
Which is daft.
There's no
but
need.
The rest of the, you know, they're good. I think it's, I mean, it's a big, wow, Richard, you're telling the world you're sacking off a supercharged V8 Range Rover, and you've gone for a computer mouse shaped Tesla family car. So, I mean, that's
it's
bold
not
move.
A pretty car, is it? I mean, that's,
no.
And also because this offer was contingent on, it's the base model, rear-wheel drive, and if you want anything but white paint, you have to pay more. And I sort of like, well, that defeats the object of going in on this deal. So, yeah, it's white.
It's fridge white.
Fine. I think it looks all right in white because, it's fridge white, appliance white. But it's got black wheel arch links, and I think the contrast is because the colours, the demo car they lent me was blue, and it's quite a drab blue.
Yeah.
And actually, all the other colours they do are quite drab. So the white is probably as good as it gets, because it's not a looker. So I don't really care. But it's got loads of room in it. The boot's massive.
It is. The boot's really good.
The range, we drove to nearly London in it last week. And, you know, the range and the efficiency seem to be very good, which is what I'm looking for. It's very, very comfortable. I mean, there's the usual caveats. Putting the wiper settings on the touchscreen is idiotic. But there are little sort of workarounds and things I've discovered that make it a little bit less stupid. But fundamentally, it's like, I need to change how the wipers are working.
I'm pretty sure no Rory Reed, ex-Top Gear Auto Trader presenter chap, I'm pretty sure he's got a Tesla Y family car.
He has. I've been talking to him about it.
Because he was telling me how crap the automatic wiper setting is.
Now, weirdly, I haven't found it, and as we've been saying, it has been razzing it down recently, and so it's been a decent test in the past 2 weeks of how the wipers work. I think the auto wipers are only about as crap as every other auto wiper system. I was expecting them to be noticeably worse, because they rely on cameras rather than a sensor in the way that everyone else does. And sometimes they're fine, and then sometimes they're not. And one thing, I will give it extra points to the fact it also has an intermittent setting, like a proper intermittent setting. Do you know a lot of cars, auto takes the place of where intermittent used to be in the store.
Yeah.
And I always like cars. Jags used to do this and as various other cars where you have the option to do proper old-fashioned intermittent. And the Tesla has two intermittent settings, but I think a lot of the thing is that people just leave it on auto and hope the car does the work, and it just can't because auto wipers are shit. So anyway, well, there we go. Well, I know we're going to probably get lots of messages about this because I know it's bizarre, isn't it? And again, like I say, it's just a car. That's the thing. It's not, obviously, they're very good at the EV side of things, but the other bits, you know, the doors don't shut with a particularly nice noise, and the panel gaps are.
Are they frameless doors? They're frameless doors, aren't they?
They're frameless doors. Which there are things about it that I really do enjoy. Frameless doors, it's like, it's a big hatchback. It doesn't need frameless doors, but I kind of like the fact that it has them. And I noticed also, I hadn't spotted this, the windows are double glazed on the doors. So it's like they've made their lives more difficult in terms of fit and finish and sealing. But actually, it's decent. I'd say that it's pretty quiet at speed, and the doors don't, you know, they don't, there's no kind of Damon Albarning. So overall, it feels quite tightly made. They're Chinese made, the model wise we get over here at the moment.
Yes,
and it feels very tight. There's no rattles or squeaks or anything like that. But yeah, it's not. You do sense the doors don't quite sort of wump shut the way they would on an Audi. And the materials are all right, actually. Again, better than I expected.
Well, weirdly, I know the time of recording this, 24 hours ago, Tesla was overtaken by BYD as the largest seller of electric vehicles.
Build your dreams
and all that.
I know, they're just going to keep on climbing, aren't they? I'm sure Tesla are trying to as well, but I think their huge rate of climb is already happened.
Yeah.
Because they're doing, what did they do last year? 1.2 million cars?
Yeah, a lot.
Was it 1.8? I can't remember now. I did see this, but it's a lot of cars and mostly just the two sort of bedrock cars. Yeah, probably it's 1.8, that they sold. But BYD did more electric car sales in the last quarter of 23. Anyway, I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, but
I was actually quite surprised. It's not a shit car. It's actually quite a good car in many ways.
Oh, yeah. And I think the charging network and the way the software works to reassure you of range and destination, I think is such a key component, which has been said before, I know.
It's really good. And I had an interesting experience. We went to Windsor in it to see some friends. And you get on the app and look up the journey in the navigation thing in the app. And then it tells you when and if you'll need to stop and how much charge you'll have left when you arrive at your destination. And then it sends, you can send it to the car. So when you get in, the nav is all primed and ready to go, which is a neat little touch. I know you can do it on other cars, but I've used apps on other cars. Our Jag had an app and it just wasn't that good. And this app is good. It seems to work. You can turn on the heated seats from your house if that kind of
thing pleases
you.
This is where the software attention to detail is where Elon's always been hot, though, isn't it? Always.
Well, I was saying this to someone the other day. I think we've got to stop making such an association between Musk and Tesla, because clearly they've got some very good engineers. I gather they're sort of, in terms of chassis engineering and stuff, they've got some really good people there from JLR and McLaren and people. They probably pay big if you want to go and have to work under the whims of a billionaire lunatic, but.
That's how you evolve quickly.
Yeah, but then, when it works out and when things are good, Musk gets all the credit. And I know he gets all the flack when it doesn't work out, but it feels like actually a lot of the good stuff, I feel like there's some good brains working on this, because there's some things you can do with that car that are just make your life as an electric car driver that bit easier. And that's what it's what kind of tipped me into doing this, rather than sort of scratching around looking for an Ioniq 5 or something like that, which I know is what you've got probably in this situation.
Well, one of the questions that somebody's asked me on this thing, which I will revisit them next podcast.
We'll go.
But of course, in that way that we always do. someone said, if Johnny had to buy a new car today that's family friendly, etc., what would it be? Well, the answer is almost certainly an Ioniq 5. I do keep looking. I can't work out about payments and leases. I just can't. It's too confusing for me with my own personal situation, whether I just buy a two-year-old one outright or whether I lease one. Because if I lease one, I can't bear the idea of saying, right, well, you've enjoyed that for 2 years. That's cost you 15 grand. And I'd be going, 15 grand? I could have just bought, like, the best element in the world and just driven that around and then sold it for 12 grand after 2 years. And I can't bear the idea of flushing that money away. I'm just fighting with myself.
Well, it's glorified car hire, isn't it, really? Which, you know, I'm quite down with. You're getting a brand new, safe, reliable car with a warranty. That's, which I know a lot of people go, that's not exciting, be a bit more adventurous. But I think also partly my Panda experience, which has slightly done my head in with just how much it's had to spend time in the garage last year, has also been a bit of a tipping point. That sort of sense, I was on my way to a school reunion a few weeks ago in the Range Rover, and there was a thing, the dashboard flashed up with something, and I was just, the heart-sinking feeling of, I'm not going to make it to this thing I really want to go to. It was, in fact, just that it when it gets grot on the sensors, the radar, you know, distance warning thing.
Grot on the radar. We've all been there.
Grot on the
radar. We've all been there.
It was just that. But my initial, the yellow triangle flashing up in the middle of the instruments is just my heart skipped a beat because I was like, oh, don't do this to me now, car. And I just thought, I think I need a little period of not having that additional low-level back-of-the-mind stress in my life. So,
hang on.
I have to say, by the way, because the Range Rover, I think I do have to sell it. I can't.
I was just about to say, does this mean the Range Rover is officially for sale now?
Yeah, if anyone wants a supercharged L322 2010, it is for sale. Don't email in with a stupid offer. I will report you to the police for molesting animals. But
you're going to put it on Facebook Marketplace and have a tsunami of press?
Yeah, or
you
gonna... but word it in such a way it seems like I'm a prostitute. No, I don't know. I do need to get rid of it. It needs to be cleaned up. But no, it is actually, it has been, touch wood, very reliable recently. I've had no particular issues with it,
it was a clean example of the mark as well, wasn't it?
It is. Well, it's not the cleanest, but it is. I'd say it's honest. And two separate garages, when they've had a look at it, both of them specialists, have said it's a good one. So I'll take that. But it's a good one that I no longer need. So, if anyone's interested, drop us a line. I will do a proper ad at some point to get it moved on. We should probably wrap
this up. We've got to land this one, Rich.
We have got to bring this beautiful Concorde of the bird world down onto the canal of podcasting.
Whilst giving everybody around you your best resting bitch face. I don't know if birds can do resting bitch face. But
I think they probably can. I reckon birds of prey have quite a good resting bit.
They do, don't they?
Right then. Before we go, I've got three things to tell you. They are one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Save on Plates Show, in which Johnny dispenses helpful tips on reducing household crockery costs. This week, he shows you how to eat a Greg's vegetarian slice off an old copy of What Car. If that's not to your taste, there's always The Late Break Show. Lots of excellent videos on there about cars and people who love cars. What have you got for us this week?
I don't know. Do you know what it... I've tried to take proper time off over Christmas, and I've just completely forgot what I'm doing. Oh, I know what it is. Yes. I'm pretty sure it's a barn find, and it's a forwarder. It's a London. It's a London. It's fucking London. Might be my first London barn find. No, second London barn find, and. Yeah, it was quite an interesting backstory. And you know what? Do you know what? If that's not your bag, or if I've got it completely wrong, there's been two over the Christmas period videos. There's a best of 2023 barn finds compilation. So please watch it.
I watched a bit of that in my Tesla, because you can watch YouTube on the screen. Me and my boy went to pick up a friend from the station, and her train was late, so we watched some of your video sitting in the car.
Hang on, you were watching it in your 20...
I mean, obviously, you could have done that on a phone as well. It's not that novel.
I was
going to
say,
there we go.
Were you watching this on your in your 2023 Tesla?
Yeah, yeah. 23. What model year is that? 23? Is that 23? All right, well, second thing I've got to tell you is I have a new book out. I might have mentioned it before, but I'm going to mention it again. It's called Boring Car Trivia 4. If you didn't get it for Christmas, go and buy it for yourself. Go on, treat yourself. It's a paperback or an e-book on Amazon, or a paperback from our merch store, where we also have hats now.
We do.
Lovely winter hats. Go and get one. They're very warm. Quality
thin
hats.
Thin Sheila-lined beanies, embroidered, sir. Oh. Good, lovely, perfect for the convertible drivers amongst you.
Yes. Sorry, I was meant to read out and I forgot. I definitely will do it next week about that. The third thing I've got to tell you is that Tic Tacs were originally called Refreshing Mints.
That's not as interesting a name, is it?
No, it's rubbish. They were introduced in 1969 and they were called Refreshing Mints, and within a year, in 1970, they were renamed Tic Tacs. Do you know why, though? They're called Tic Tacs.
No. Is it the way you tap them out?
It's, well, sort of. It's apparently, it was inspired by the noise that's made by opening and closing that little plastic box they come in.
And was the box always that box, or did they change the box and then model a marketing spin around it?
I think the box was already like that, and then they went, "Oh, that's quite a good name, a Tic Tac." And but then in some countries the box is clear and the things inside are coloured, and in some countries, no matter what flavour, they're always white, and it's the packet is a solid colour.
I think it.
You can tell I've read up about
you
Tic Tacs.
You have, haven't you? Do you like Tic Tacs? I mean, I don't know anybody that buys Tic Tacs. Or do you?
Well, I like them, but I don't buy them, because then you have them in your pocket and you just rattle. And it's annoying. So, no, I don't. Maybe I should have some on my desk, because I do like them. Do you know something else, which I only... you might know this already, but I didn't realise this, that Tic Tacs are made by the same company that makes Kinder Surprise and Ferrero Rocher.
I did not know this.
Yeah, Ferrero makes Tic Tacs. I don't know why I didn't know that. I thought Tic Tac was its own company, but no.
For, do you know what? For that Bentley back seat would be perfect. The centre console's quite chubby. And there's a really good cubby space for a tray of Ferrero Rocher. You could go on a four-hour journey and make yourself very sick by just eating 80 Ferrero Rochers and then go around some heavy-duty back lanes, I can say.
Right, we should end this now. Before we go, just a little caveat here. We had a message from a listener called Stee who said, I've had a rough 4 years. The last 12 months have been particularly bloody rubbish. But his 15-year-old son, Dylan, has noodled some guitar over the top of our merchandise song from the end of the show. Stee recorded him doing a little bit of jamming over that. So I have put the two together. So this week we play out with the usual merchandise song, but with Dylan jamming over the top of it. So thank you, Dylan, for that. Top work. And thank you, Steve, for sending it in. And thank you for listening. And thank you, in fact, to all of you for listening. We'll do this all again next week. But until then, goodbye.
Thanks, everybody. Much appreciated. Thanks, goodbye. Thanks, mate. Cheers, mate. Happy 2024, mate. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Mugs, T-shirts, stickers. T-shirts, stickers. Mugs, T-shirts, stickers. And now we do hats too.
They're very stylish. This may come as a surprise, but Smith and Sniff have merchandise. You won't believe your eyes. Smith and Sniff have merchandise. Sadly, we don't do pies, but Smith and Sniff have merchandise. One day we might sell ties. Smith and Sniff have merchandise. We'll be right back.
Bentley.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.